Hey, this is Lavinia at Shebe Shonuff on Twitter from the Nerdy Black Chicks podcast, where my co-host Bujetto Razi and I talk about news, politics, entertainment, current events, pop culture, and, of course, general wretchedness. And you can check us out on Twitter, iTunes, and TalkShoe. But shout out to Mr. Span for hooking a sister up, because I just won $100 by listening to the Span Report. So keep it locked, get with it, because good things come to those who listen.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 56 of the report, man. Yeah, this is the post-Thanksgiving Day episode, the post-Black Friday episode, man. The post-Bullshit and Ferguson episode of the Span Report podcast, man. And, it's been about a week since the last time I talked to you guys, man. There's been a lot of shit going on in the news since the last time I talked to you guys, but I'm pretty sure you guys know just but from the title alone that I'm gonna be talking about Ferguson today, man. I'm gonna talk about not only some of the reactions that I had or some of the reactions that I've observed, but just the happenings there, man. What's been going on there, and what have you, man. Just honestly, this entire episode is gonna be me kind of clearing my head. Honestly, it's gonna be me clearing my head, trying to make sense of what it is that's going on there, trying to make sense of the world, man, because it's a whole lot of shit that's going on with this that doesn't necessarily make sense to me, doesn't make sense to a whole doesn't make sense to a whole hell of a lot of people. So I'm gonna talk about that here on this episode, man. But before I get into all of that, man, of course I gotta let you guys know how you can get at me here at the Span Report podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up on the Span Report hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Send me a voicemail. I'll play those voicemails here on the show and respond to you here on the show. You can also hit me up on the email. The email is a new email address. It is now feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Send me some emails there. I'll read those emails here and reply to those here on the show as well. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. It's pretty much the same way everywhere, Mr_Span. Check me out on Twitter. Chop it up with me on Instagram. We can get it down like that. And of course, for everything that you need as far as the Span Report is concerned, whether it be the podcast, whether it be the videos of the podcast, whether it be the Span TV videos, anytime, anything that has anything to do with the Span Report, go to thespanreport.com. You can get your feel of the Span Report there, man. Happy post-Thanksgiving, y'all. brother got a lot of things to be thankful about, man. Just being able to even do this show, to be able to talk to you guys, man, to get this thing, these things off of my mind, get them off of my chest, to converse with you guys about what it is that's going on in the world, man. I'm thankful for that, man. I'm also thankful for the feast. I'm thankful for that feast that my girl was able to put together, man. She did a wonderful job on Thanksgiving. And I'm still smashing on Thanksgiving Day leftovers, man. It's a lot. It's a lot, and I'm working through it. But yeah, man, Thanksgiving Day was good, man. My Lions won. Shout out to the Lions, man. They took care of business. I was able to talk shit to my family back in Chicago, man. I've never been a Bears fan. I know it's ironic for a lot of people when they see that I'm from Chicago and I live in Detroit and everything else. I've always been a Lions fan. Ever since I ever paid any attention to football, I was a Barry Sanders fan, and it just kind of carried over from there. I've always been a Lions fan, never really been a Bears fan, been a Bulls fan all my life. So it was like that combination between the two, man. I'm always torn between the two cities. But, yeah, I'm repping Detroit right now, man. Detroit stand up, Detroit versus everybody, man. And them Lions took care of business on Thanksgiving Day. It's about time. It's about time. We were in a big-ass drought as far as touchdowns and scoring period was concerned. But, yeah, man, outside of that, I know Black Friday came and went. I didn't participate in any Black Friday shopping. And I haven't for the last couple of years. I have, you know, a couple different reasons why, especially when the stores start trying to open up on Thanksgiving. And I've worked retail before. I used to work at Toys R Us for a short period of time. And so having to be at work and during the holiday when everybody else is at home with their family and everything else, I vowed not to, you know, do the Black Friday shopping on Thanksgiving and leave it for Friday. But even this year, like on Friday, I didn't do any shopping. I bought some Christmas lights for my tree that I haven't finished really putting together just yet. And yeah, man, that's all I did. That's all I did, man. And yeah, Thanksgiving and eating. That's pretty much the gist of it. And part of it, like, I know you guys haven't heard a hell of a lot from me over the course of the week. And that was by design, man. Like, I had to check out. I had to unplug. Of course, all of you guys know what the decision was in Ferguson with the grand jury deciding not to indict Darren Wilson for the murder of Mike Brown. And honestly, like, I can't necessarily say that I was surprised by the decision. I think they kind of tipped their hand to it like days in advance when you have the governor, Jay Nixon, calling for a state of emergency days before the decision had even come out. When you have the National Guard who had been called and set on standby days before the decision had come out. When you have a prosecuting attorney who seemed to go out of his way to try to figure out a way not to prosecute the suspect in the crime, you know, it was one of those things where I wasn't necessarily surprised. Like, they were tipping their hand to let us know that, like, yo, this is what's going to happen. You know, they had given us days in advance to let us know that these things weren't going to exactly go the way that common sense would deem that these things go. So I can't necessarily say that I was surprised, but at the same time, even though I was not surprised, that didn't make me much less, it didn't make me any less incensed. It didn't leave me with the sense of not being pissed. I was sitting up watching that shit, the news conference and everything else, and I had to honestly, like, turn it. I couldn't watch it anymore. I had to just say fuck it and get up and leave the TV. I couldn't watch it anymore because I knew we had been through this before. Unfortunately, we've been through this before. Take for instance, not even earlier. What was that, last year, man? We went through this with Trayvon Martin. Same thing, you know. And and it was one of those things to where you sit up, and if you sit up and you watch the television all day long and you're listening to these pundits and they're talking about, well, it could have went this way and it could have went that way, and you got people who are paid to talk about they're paid to bring you a certain perspective. They're not necessarily paid to bring you any objectivity. They're paid to bring you a certain perspective. And so when you have someone, say for instance, like a Rudy Giuliani, who goes on TV to say that Black folks are being killed by white police officers because Black people are killing each other, you have to understand that was by design. You know, that wasn't anything that was off the cuff or anything else. That was by design. He was put there for a specific reason to inflame the discussion. When you talk about, the public discourse, you know, when, like, I had to check out, like, I'm watching people whom I thought I respected and people who I thought I liked say some really fucked up shit. You know, it was one of those things to where, like, I had to unplug from the discussion to a certain degree because I knew for my own sanity that I would probably fucking lose it. And so, yeah, for a few days, man, I didn't really say a whole hell of a lot socially, even about that. I just had to check out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It was interesting being at work. You know, I work with, you know, primarily a bunch of white guys, you know, and some of them, they real cool. You know, like I said, I've talked about my relationship with my coworkers on the job, man. We're pretty much, we bicker and stuff like that. Almost part of it is like brothers and sisters and shit. You bicker because you're around each other every day. Some of the things you do, you might not necessarily like. Some of the things I may do, they might not necessarily like. But at the end of the day, we all get the job done. We all get paid together, you know, so you have that dynamic. But when you have something like this happen and it boils down to some racial lines and things like that, you start really seeing where people where people had their lines. And I tried to shy away from a lot of the discussion because at the end of the day, I didn't want to make it really awkward for me when I go to work. You know, I don't want to have to cuss motherfuckers out every day when I'm at work. You know, it's hard for me not to do it. You know, it's honestly like sometimes people really don't understand. Like I'm an ornery person in the morning, especially. But like it's hard for me to like bite my tongue a lot of times. I don't know if people really understand how hard it is for me to not say something when I feel like something isn't necessarily right. So yeah, I had quite a few interesting interactions with folks, man. And I tried to avoid them. I really did. I tried to not even have these discussions with people. I tried to check out. And it was one of those things, man, to where you wish you had answers for stuff and you don't necessarily have them. You know, like you kind of wish it was something that you could logically point to and say, well, you know what, that's why this happened and I understand it. But you with things like this, you can't. I saw a tweet. I don't know where the tweet originated because I've seen it posted by quite a few people. But it said something to the effect of, it doesn't take 100 days to figure out if murder is a crime. It takes 100 days to explain why it isn't. And that's pretty much what happened here. You know, I don't know. We're like, it's kind of hard for me to articulate this shit. Okay. I'm going to tell y'all a story. I'm going to tell y'all a story, some shit that happened to me when I was a kid. I was 12 years old on the west side of Detroit playing basketball. This one, Span had hoop dreams and shit, right? Span going to the NBA. They was calling me Baby Jordan and shit. Imagine that, right? 12 years old playing basketball on the street with my friends. Regular day in the summertime. All the kids are out around the basketball rim. We're playing, and all of a sudden, there was this. It was this drug raid. It was a police van roll up on the block. Police van rolls up on the block, and they get out of the van, rush out of the van or whatever, round all the kids up, and one of the officers pulls up, puts a 12-gauge shotgun to my head. Tells me to see if I could outrun this slug, right? So, mind you, I'm 12 years old. I live in the ghetto, but I had never had a gun pointed at me at that point. Not yet. Like, that was the first time I'd ever had a gun pointed at me. It was by the police at 12, right? So they round all these kids up. Now, mind you, there was a known drug house on the block. Make no mistake about it, there was a known drug house on the block. But they round all these people from outside, all these kids and stuff like that. We're all outside. We're playing basketball. The girls are sitting on another porch, and they're watching us play basketball. They round all these kids up, and they take us into this house as they perform this drug raid, right? And I remember them having all of the boys in the hallway, facing the wall, as they began to frisk us. And then they all individually brought us into the kitchen where they had us strip, pull down your trousers, pull down your drawers, spread your ass cheeks and cough to make sure we didn't have any dope hidden in our ass, right? And then I remember after, you know, they had us in there, they didn't arrest any of us. They didn't arrest any of us at all. I don't even quite remember if they even found any drugs. I do remember them telling us to help my friend clean up his house because they would be back and the house would better be clean by the time they got back there. Right. And so we helped him clean his house. We helped him clean the house. So much so that by the time his mother got home, she didn't even know her house had been the subject of a drug raid. She didn't believe us that her home had been raided for drugs. Right? So when I'm having conversations with people about, you know, interactions with the police, I mean, a lot of you know about my arrest in Chicago in 2011. A lot of you have heard that story time and again. But when I'm having conversations with folks about interactions with the police, I don't think a lot of my white friends understand the relationship that a lot of us have with the police. And it isn't about being raised to not trust the police. It isn't necessarily about being raised on the pop culture adage of fuck the police or whatever. Understand that that shit comes from somewhere. It didn't just become a pop culture thing. That was one of those things that came about because of police misconduct in the community in which they were supposed to be serving. Right? So understand that mine was just one case. Now, mind you, I got a few friends who are still with us today who remember that. Some of them aren't with us anymore. But that's just one neighborhood, right? That's just one neighborhood that happened in. Who's to say how many other different neighborhoods that happened in where children were brought into the aggressiveness of the police? Up until that point, I can't even say up until that point, because even further on down the line, like, I never really had issues with the police, man, but it was just one of those instances that always kind of stuck in the back of my head of how that came about, man. I'm outside playing basketball, and the next minute I got a 12-gauge shotgun pointed to my head by the fucking police telling me to see if I could outrun a slug. So you got that. And what I want a lot of white folks to understand, like, when you come to, like, when, say, for instance, we're having this discussion about Mike Brown and Darren Wilson and whether or not Mike Brown attacked Darren Wilson, you know, we can get into the details of that whole argument. But when you tell your friend, your black friend, that he should put himself in the shoes of the police officer, understand that you're going to get some pushback on that, because that's not your friend's experience. That's not how your friend is going to look at it. Your friend may have his own experience with the police that you may not even be able to fathom, because the shit never happens to you. A lot of you don't know the fear that comes with getting pulled over by the police, knowing you haven't done anything wrong. You don't know that. Okay. I understand this probably won't be the most entertaining spam report you've listened to ever. Probably ever. But at the same time, I'm still trying to wrap my head around a lot of this shit. Like, okay. Let me get some order about me here. Let me get some order. The rioting. A lot of folks want to, you know, focus on the rioting that happened in Ferguson after the decision came down. And the I don't think anybody necessarily condones rioting. And I don't think the rioters necessarily reflect those who had been protesting in Ferguson for over 100 days peacefully without incident. I think it's disingenuous to continuously to focus on the rioters as opposed to those who protested and, you know, I guess you could say civil disobedience, but or disturbing your peace or whatever. But it was interesting to me to see how so many people could turn their noses up on the conditions of poor Black people, not understanding the frustration that goes into not exactly knowing what to do. Right. So, and I've been guilty of that sometimes. Like, I've been guilty of saying that, like, you know, what the fuck does, you know, robbing a beauty supply shop of weave having, you know, have to do with Mike Brown? What does, you know, looting a liquor store have to do with Mike Brown? What does any of that have to do with Mike Brown? And those are legitimate questions to ask. At the same time, I think when you're in a position to where nothing seems like it's right, like nothing, like where people can gun folks who look like you down with no repercussions, no consequences, no punishment doled out. Sometimes folks can feel like that's their only recourse. Not to say that it's right, but sometimes folks feel like this, you know, this that's their only recourse, right? And then I'm seeing folks like there was this call to like boycott Black Friday, right? Now, mind you, like I said, I the last couple years, I haven't really been big on shopping for Black Friday. And I didn't do any Black Friday shopping this year. And it wasn't necessarily because of Mike Brown, but it was because I had already kind of set in a stance that that wasn't something that I would participate in. But for those of you who feel like you're going to criticize those who don't want to shop on Black Friday, who want to boycott Black Friday, for those who told you to only shop with Black businesses on Black Friday, for those who told you, you know, we need to spend our money with our own people. For those of you who decided that you weren't going to do that, that's all fine and good. But if somebody wants to boycott, stand up and protest, you need to shut the fuck up and let them do what they're going to do if you're not going to do a goddamn thing. How about that? How about not necessarily, how about trying not to criticize somebody who's actually trying to do something? So if you needed that 56-inch television, man, go by all means, go ahead and get your 56-inch television. But don't knock the next motherfucker because he chose not to participate in that. Especially if you're not going to do anything. You're not going to speak to it. You're not going to participate in anything that has anything to do with standing up for a purpose or a goal. You're not trying to accomplish anything. Then you need to shut the fuck up. You need to shut the fuck up. I mean, you think about the Montgomery bus boycott, right? That Montgomery bus boycott was one of the most pivotal movements of the civil rights movement. It brought the city of Montgomery to its knees financially because they couldn't count on the dollars of the Black community to fund their transit system. Brought them to his knees to the point where, you know what, we're going to have to make some changes here. That's pretty much what a Black Friday boycott stems from. The key is to sustain that. That's the hardest part. Getting it started is easy. The hardest part is sustaining it. But if you already got people shooting the shit down before it could even fucking get started, because you already got your plans to go do what the fuck it is you want to do. It's one of those things, man. Like, I'm seeing my own people like shoot down shit, and they have no alternative to present. They have nothing to present where it gives people another option to exert some type of power, exert some type of force, to exert some type of demand for change as it affects us here in this country. It's very easy to sit on the side and just say, man, fuck them people. That's the easiest shit to do. What the fuck do you got an alternative for these folks to do? You know? So I would advise a lot of my folks who was out here talking all that shit about, you know, the people who were boycotting Black Friday, the people who were making it inconvenient for you to go get that television that you were going to have to fight another motherfucker for to get. I think they were standing up for something a bit more than, you know, your you know, blind consumerism, so to speak. I know I'm rambling, man. I know I'm rambling. Another thing, too. I've seen quite a few folks. I've seen some of my own people, you know, they bought so hard into this respectability politics shit, right? So you get into the old adage of, well, if you look like you were about something, you know, you'll probably be somebody and, you know, maybe they'll respect you more. You know, maybe they won't necessarily see you as a threat. Maybe they won't necessarily treat you like a criminal if you didn't dress like a criminal and what have you, right? You hear these type of things all the time. Bill Cosby, that was one of his things before, you know, like a few years ago, which actually got a lot of people pissed off at Bill Cosby, was the fact that he was going around telling people, well, you need to speak proper English, you need to dress a certain way, you need to do this, you need to do that, right? Ironically, Bill Cosby finds himself in a bit of a brouhaha of rape allegations, no matter how respectable he may have thought he was, right? So I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of folks saying, well, Mike Brown was walking in the middle of the street. Mike Brown, you know, stole some cigarillos. Mike Brown did these things, man. Like, yo, at the end of the day, does any of that equate to him being shot 6 times by the police 150 feet away from him? Does any of that, like, justify that, right? If Mike Brown had on a suit and tie, that's what you believe would have mitigated that circumstance? Because Mike Brown may have had on a suit and tie, maybe. That would have mitigated that circumstance. Do you really honestly believe that? Do folks forget that Martin Luther King Jr., for as much as we champion Martin's message of nonviolent protest, and as much as white folks like to remind us of Dr. King and his nonviolent protest, that they shot that man in the face in fucking in Memphis, wearing a shirt and tie, a reverend, a beacon of respectability, was shot in his face for nonviolent protest. The Nobel Peace Prize winner sat with presidents fighting on the behalf of Black people, fighting on the behalf of poor people, shot in the face for fighting for those folks, right? And we're supposed to sit up in here and talk about the respectability thing. Like, well, if you look a certain way and you talk a certain way, then they'll respect you. And they, you know, that shit doesn't matter, man. If they see you as a fucking threat, they're going to take you out. If they see you as a threat, they're not gonna necessarily think about whether or not you're the nice one and here's the bad one. No, they don't fucking like you regardless. You wearing a shirt and tie isn't going to keep you from being shot down. You being in a suit and tie isn't going to keep you from being discriminated against. You being in a suit and tie isn't going to prevent you from being looked at any differently than the next Black man. To some, right? We champion Martin Luther King's message now, and white folks love to. I'm gonna tell y'all love to try to remind us of Martin's message when you weren't taking heed to Martin's message when he was giving it. It's very easy to be pro Martin King now that he's dead and you don't have to deal with him. You don't have to necessarily you don't fear the repercussions of his critique of what the fuck is going on right now. You think Martin Luther King would be sitting on the sidelines right now with you as you decide you want to legitimize what happened to Mike Brown? You think Martin King would be in line with that? Understand that that's not what would be happening right now. That's if Martin King was alive right now, Martin King wouldn't be sitting around with you saying, you know what, Mike Brown deserved that shit. That nigga there. It wouldn't be happening that way. And so for a lot of my brothers, man, with this respectability politics shit, y'all need to get the fuck out of it. Y'all need to stop that, man. Y'all need to stop that shit. Okay, I got this list, man. I got this list. And again, I apologize to anybody who's watching this right now. I apologize to anybody who may listen to this later, because this isn't exactly how I wanted to present this, but on a day like today, like after the verdict and after Thanksgiving and everything else, just trying to sit down and make sense of this shit isn't exactly the easiest thing for me to do. So I came up with this little list, man. And it's to my white friends. It's to my white friends on how not to be the asshole white friend when it comes to this situation, right? So the first one is, don't ask your black friends to put themselves in the officer's shoes. And I think I alluded to this earlier. Understand that your friends' experience with the police may not be your experience with the police. They're coming at it from a totally different perspective. They don't understand your perspective. You may not understand theirs. And that's perfectly okay. It's okay to not necessarily understand. But at this particular juncture, because of the nature of what's going on, if you don't want an argument, don't ask your black friends to put themselves in the officer's shoes. Just don't. Don't tell your black friends that the prosecutor presented all of the evidence and that there wasn't enough evidence to go to trial. Because I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of your black friends will tell you that's bullshit and people have gone to trial over less. The point of the grand jury was to present probable cause to go to trial. There's some inconsistencies in the story. You got two sides of this story. You got Mike Brown's side, or the witnesses who saw what happened, and Darren Wilson's side. There's some inconsistencies between the two. We go to trial. That's what a grand jury is supposed to determine, not whether or not there wasn't enough evidence to convict Darren Wilson. That's not the job of the grand jury. The grand jury is to just present probable cause. There was a probable cause that what he did was wrong, and we need to go to the trial to determine whether or not Darren Wilson was wrong in his actions. So a lot of people's frustration is the simple fact that you, with this grand jury decision, that you decide that it isn't even worthy of a trial, that nobody can even question or cross-examine the evidence that's being presented. That wasn't even an option. Because this was presented in a grand jury in sort of like a secret trial sort of way. So don't go to your friends. Don't go to your black friends and tell them that all of the evidence was presented and that there wasn't enough evidence to bring that to trial. That's bullshit. Anybody, and you will get into an argument with your black friends if you go to any of them saying that. Don't try to trivialize your black friends' experiences when they tell you what's happened with them and the police. You know, don't try to say, well, I know of an instance where this happened to my white friend. Don't try to say that, well, like there was another instance where, like, you know, I had some people that I was having a discussion with, and we were talking about the many instances of black men being killed by the police with little to no consequences or punishment at all. I mean, you think about Oscar Grant shot in the back while he was handcuffed on the ground. Police officers that shot him only did maybe 2 years. You think about what happened to Eric Garner in New York. There's a grand jury that's supposed to be convening for his chokehold death that was caught on video. You think about what happened to Ayanna Jones, who was that happened here in Detroit during a raid on her home. She was shot, a child, 7 years old, shot by a police officer raided into her home. We could talk about Amadou Diallo, shot 41 times by the New York City Police Department. We could talk about Sean Bell, who was shot at 50 times coming out of his bachelor party. We could talk about Malice Green, although the officers from Malice Green are still in prison. We could talk about Malice Green being beaten to death by the police in here in Detroit. We could talk about Rodney King, who was beaten and was caught on tape, and those officers were let go. I mean, there's so many different instances where we could talk about the police and how they've been overhanded in their response to the Black community. And then you want to present to your Black friends, well, there was this one case in Utah where this white kid got shot by this Black police officer and nobody protested. The one anomaly. If you want to avoid an argument with your Black friends, I don't suggest you do that. I don't suggest you do that. I would also suggest you don't use this as an opportunity to try to scold your Black friends on the state of Black on Black crime. This isn't the thing to do. Why? Because one, it's disingenuous and you don't really care. And let's just be honest. I know I'm being real speculative with those type of statements and things like that, but you don't really care. When you talk about Black on Black crime, you don't really care. That's a talking point that had been brought to you by your folks over at Fox News or whatever conservative type of leaning news organization that you may partake in, better yet, it's not even just that, just media period. A lot of talking heads will give you the Black on Black crime talking point as a way to legitimize or to justify the overhanded way the police those in minority and poor areas, right? You'll talk about, like, who was that? Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, who gets on TV and he talks about there would be no white police officers in Black neighborhoods killing Black citizens if Black people weren't in Black communities killing each other. As if he's ignorant to the fact that 84% of white people are killed by other white people. But we don't have these discussions on white on white crime. We don't have these discussions on the fact that most people kill those or commit crimes against those who are in close proximity to them. It just so happens that most white folks are around other white folks. And guess what? Most Black folks are around other Black folks. So guess who they're going to be? Guess who's going to be the victims of the crimes that where they are? Those who look just like them. Crime is as segregated as your neighborhood. We could talk about, the fact that over 60% of violent crime arrests are of white people, right? But it's funny how that works out in the sense of Black people making up a majority of the prison population. And that correlation never really rolls over in your head to think like, wait, there's a problem there. There's a problem there. How is it possible that white folks are committing all of this crime and yet Black folks are a majority population in the prison system? And then you'll go to the prison statistics to justify, okay, this is why we need all these police over in their communities, right? Because these niggas can't contain themselves. They can't control themselves. They don't know how to act. Right? This is what we'll tell folks. This is how we'll legitimize the fact that we're going to have all these police and we're going to have these overhanded taxes when it comes to these people because they don't know how to control themselves. So we're going to control them for them. And we're going to lock them up in droves. And then, you know, I've had this discussion quite a few times and folks say, well, you know, Black people are disproportionate. You know, they want to talk about being disproportionate. You know, they're disproportionately violent and everything else. We could talk about proportional math, but at the end of the day, it doesn't make the crime numbers themselves unimportant. It doesn't necessarily, it's not as if because there are more white people in the United States of America that we're just supposed to excuse the crime that they do commit because there are more of you. that's one of the things I find utterly hilarious, is that like a lot of people would actually have that type of mindset to think that, well, it's because there's more of us, that's why we commit all this crime. Like, okay, but why are there more of my people locked up if that were the case? You know, so again, for my white friends, don't use this as an opportunity to try to scold black people on black crime. Okay. And lastly, don't tell your black friends that this isn't about race. Right? You know, sometimes when we have in these discussions, man, when we try to have a real frank and a frank discussion, an honest discussion, you know, some of our white friends want to take the race thing off of the table, right? Because they don't have an answer for it. They don't necessarily know how to deal with it. They don't necessarily understand that their experience is different because of the color of their skin. And some of them just simply refuse to acknowledge it. They don't want to admit that, you know, their skin color gives them a certain amount of, say, for instance, they don't want to admit to having a certain amount of privilege, so to speak. You know, I don't want to speak for white folks, and I can't speak for white folks, but some of them simply just don't want to admit that there are some privileges with being white. They resent the fact that them being white exalts them to the point where they can have privileges and everything else, right? So I'm sorry. I gotta check out. Okay. Yeah. I gotta go. If you want to reach out to me here at the Spirit Report Podcast, let your voice be heard. There's a lot of different ways you can do that. You can reach me at the Spirit Report hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemails. I will play those voicemails here on the show and respond to you here on the show as well. You can also hit me up on the email. The email is feedback@thespareport.com. That's feedback@thespareport.com. Send me those emails. I will read and respond to those emails here on the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter and on Instagram. My name on both platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. So you can hit me up there. We can chop it up there. We can talk and laugh and then everything else. And of course, you can hit me up on thespareport.com. Check out every Span TV video. Check out all of the Span Report podcasts. Check out all the guest appearances that I've had the opportunity to be on other shows. Yeah, everything you need. Everything you need as far as the Span Report is concerned is at thespareport.com. I'm sorry. I really am. I wish I could have articulated this show a whole hell of a lot better than what came across today. And I may, you know, revisit this topic again. I'm pretty sure I probably will revisit this again on another episode. But So until next time, fam. Peace.